This is Jennifer Lawrence from Old Chatham, and you are listening to WGXC Accra, 90.7 FM and WGXC.org.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. And we've got all sorts of songs and sounds and stories for you today. We'll hear 2021 new music from Burial and from Luke Stort, among others. And we'll also hear the latest Hudson Valley Word of Mouth segment from Julia Jorn. She's speaking with Rita Seco Payne, the artist behind Baco Ceramics, in Cherry Valley and Otsego County. Plus, we'll also hear what the activist group Climate Action Council wants New York to do to slow down global warming. And we'll hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Makers. All starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
Connection and the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network.
Holidays get started December 3rd and December 4th on WGXC with two special broadcasts. First, on Friday, December 3rd, it's the annual Little Magician Annual Holiday Show, live from the WGXC Hudson Studio. Join the Little Magician and his Christmas sisters as they present their 8th annual Holiday Hootenanny on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM. And then at 6 p.m., Saturday, December 4th, tune in another holiday tradition. Turn out or tune in another holiday tradition. That's Phil Klein's Unsilent Night, live from Art O' My again this year. Unsilent Night is an original composition by Phil Klein, written specifically to be heard outdoors in the month of December, where the audience becomes a performer. You're asked to bring a cell phone or a boombox with a tape deck to join in the fun. Go to WGXC.org for more information about Phil Klein's Unsilent Night, and you can turn out at 6 p.m. at Art O' My in Ghent, or tune in on WGXC 90.7 FM at 6 p.m. Saturday, December 4th for Unsilent Night on the radio at WGXC.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Bob Wills Architecture of Rhinecliff, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click Donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Andrea Macko reports at Porcupine Soup that Greene County now has exceeded 5,000 COVID-19 cases. That means more than 10% of county residents have caught the contagious virus. Greene County also reported three more deaths from coronavirus on November 29th. So far, Greene County has had 5,027 cases and 87 deaths since the pandemic rules began being implemented here in March 2020. Columbia County, with a larger population, reports 6,107 cases and 106 deaths since March 2020. Columbia County has reported that no one who was vaccinated has died there of COVID-19, but Greene County hides the vaccination status of its deaths. Greene County officials did report that one of the people who died this week was in their early 30s, and the other two were in their 50s, all with comorbidities. The only major local hospital, Columbia Memorial in Hudson, began temporarily prohibiting visitors to its inpatient units this week as case counts grow. Quote, keeping the number of people in the facility to a minimum will help protect our patients, staff, and community, unquote, hospital officials said in a press release. In Greene County, 26,680 of the 47,491 citizens are fully vaccinated. In Columbia County, 38,397 of 59,916 citizens have been fully vaccinated. Read more about this story at Porcupine Soup.
Paul Kirby reports in the Daily Freeman about three more local COVID-19 deaths. Dutchess County reported two more COVID-19 deaths on November 30th, and Ulster County reported one more. And on November 30th, Ulster County reported 9.6% of the most recent 1,110 tests for coronavirus in the county came back positive. Ulster County has not had a positivity rate above 9% since January 21st, when very few vaccinations were available. Dutchess County on November 30th only reported a 4% positivity rate. Meanwhile, Columbia County reported 61 new cases on November 30th and 46 more the day before. And Greene County added another 44 cases on November 30th and 52 more on November 29th. Albany County announced another death and 211 more positive cases on December 1st. Rensselaer County added 125 new cases on December 1st. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman.
Kenneth C. Crowe II and Brendan J. Lyons are reporting for the Times Union that a judge on December 1st unsealed an indictment accusing Rensselaer County Executive Steve McLaughlin of misusing campaign funds and falsifying campaign finance filings. The indictment was the product of a long-running investigation by the State Attorney General's Office and the FBI. McLaughlin, a Republican, was indicted on two felony counts, grand larceny and offering a false instrument for filing. The Attorney General's office began its probe of McLaughlin's campaign for county executive in 2017 and included an examination of his financial dealings during the time he was a member of the state assembly. McLaughlin allegedly stole $5,000 in funds from his campaign account on November 21, 2017, just weeks after winning election to his county post. He then falsely reported the expense in campaign documents filed with the State Board of Elections. McLaughlin arrived in the courtroom on December 1st for his arraignment around noon in front of Judge Jennifer Sober, the newly reelected county executive, who was represented by attorney Benjamin W. Hill, has until January 17th to enter a plea. He was released on his own recognizance. McLaughlin did not speak during the proceedings before Sober. He rushed from the courtroom without responding to reporters' questions. The Democratic minority leadership of the Rensselaer County Legislature called on McLaughlin to resign, while the Republican chair of the GOP-controlled legislature stuck by him. The indictment was handed up by a county grand jury following a November presentation by the members of the Attorney General's Public Integrity Unit. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Nick Reisman is reporting for New York State Politics that Assemblyperson Dee Dee Barrett, who represents part of Columbia and Dutchess counties, has chosen her favorite among the four Democrats so far that have announced they are running for governor. On December 1st, Barrett endorsed current Governor Kathy Hochul over Attorney General Letitia James, New York City Public Advocate Jamani Williams, and Congressperson Tom Suozzi in the Democrat primary election next year. Barrett said, and I quote, "After just 3 months as governor, Kathy Hochul has completely reset the tone of New York state government, increasing transparency, collaboration, and civility. She truly knows the values New York's diverse communities and rich history all across the state. I am proud to endorse Governor Hochul for a full term and can't wait to see what we can get done working together," end quote. Barrett announced her endorsement along with Assemblypersons John McDonnell, Pat Fay, Carrie Warner, and Billy Jones. Hochul said, and I quote, "I am honored to have earned the support and endorsements of these five distinguished members of the New York State Assembly. Over several months, we have worked collaboratively to deliver meaningful results for working families throughout the Capital Region, Hudson Valley, and North Country. I look forward to building on our progress to create an economy that gives every New Yorker the opportunity to thrive and succeed," end quote. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics.
Nick Reisman is reporting for New York State of Politics that agricultural producers and farmers in New York are preparing for a decision in the coming weeks by state labor officials that could lower the threshold for overtime pay. Farmers statewide traveled to Albany December 1st to urge Governor Kathy Hochul to oppose the change and outline the impact that change would have on their businesses. "It's going to force a lot of change," unquote, said Eric Ohms, a dairy farmer from Columbia County and the vice president of the New York Farm Bureau. Quote, "It could mean people growing more corn. It could mean people getting out of the business entirely," unquote. At issue is lowering the threshold for overtime pay from 60 hours a week. Farmers say the change is unrealistic for agricultural businesses that do not operate on a 9-to-5 schedule. Farmers like Ohms warned the move would mean a reduction in New York-grown products at markets and grocery stores. Quote, "If you raise their labor rate that much, it's going to lead to less vegetables grown in this state," unquote, Ohms said. Quote, "We evolve. Everyone evolves over time. But if you want fresh fruit and vegetables and fresh products in New York, this is not the best way to accomplish that," unquote. Read more about the story at NewYorkStateOfPolitics.com.
Mid-Hudson News reports that New York State Senator Michelle Henchy and Assemblyperson Kevin Cahill have introduced legislation to make November 26 Sojourner Truth Day in New York. Sojourner Truth was an American abolitionist and women's rights activist. Truth was born into slavery in Schuylkill in Ulster County. After escaping slavery with her infant daughters, she won a court case to recover her son in 1828. The first black women to win such a case against a white man. The YMC youth crew of Kingston have been working to honor the life and legacy of the abolitionist and suffragette and inspired the proposed bill in Albany. Youth Empowerment Coordinator Jessica Alonzo said, and I quote, "It feels so good to know that this state, her birthplace and place where she fought for freedom for so many years, could forever have a day for honoring and celebrating the one and only Sojourner Truth. This day can serve New York State residents in so many ways. It should be a day for solidarity and community, a day for honoring the countless black females that have fought for freedom and justice and made strides for generations to come. A day for lifting up and being more supportive to our neighbors and to the local activists that are currently fighting to make strides against injustice and systemic oppressions. And, of course, for giving thanks for all your blessings," end quote. Henchy said Sojourner Truth is, and I quote, "a hero in our community who possessed unbelievable courage and perseverance as a warrior for justice, equality, and freedom for all people," end quote.
Patricia R. Doxey is reporting for the Daily Freeman that acting State Supreme Court Justice Edward McLaughlin has ordered the Dutchess County Board of Elections to open 7 absentee ballots cast in the town of Stanford elections last month. The validity of those ballots has been challenged by the Republicans, prompting the attorney for the Democratic candidates to withdraw his objection to 5 contested absentee ballots cast by the GOP, according to Democratic Elections Commissioner Hannah Black. Black said McLaughlin decided the 7 ballots contested by Republicans had to be opened because there was no legal challenge to their validity. Quote, "The 7 should have technically been opened before we went to court," unquote, she said. Votes cast on the 12 ballots in question did not change the outcome of the election, Black said. Following the court's ruling, Dutchess County Republican Elections Commissioner Eric Haight released a statement in which he said he was, quote, gratified the court ordered the Board of Elections to count all the ballots. The Democrats tried to pull a stunt to only count the Democratic absentees and discard the Republican ballots, unquote, Haight said. Committee or candidate challenges to the validity of absentee and affidavit ballots are not unusual. Those ballots are sometimes set aside for 3 days, then counted, provided no court action has been filed. In the Stanford case, Trebek filed an order to show cause in state Supreme Court involving the five ballots he challenged, which he and Black said blocked the Board of Elections from opening the ballots until a court determined their validity. There was no court action filed challenging the validity of the seven ballots to which Republicans objected. Read more in the Daily Freeman.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day. Now your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Thursday, a chance of rain before 8 a.m., then showers are likely, mainly after 3 p.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature high near 47 degrees. There'll be a chance of showers before 1 a.m. on Thursday night. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 33 degrees. And on Friday, it will be mostly sunny with a temperature high near 40 degrees. And Friday night, a slight chance of snow showers after 1 a.m. It will be partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 28 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC. 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
You have tuned into all sorts of creative community voices on the radio Thursday, December 2nd on 90.7 FM. Including at 10 a.m., Cheryl Kay speaks with Montreal-based multi-reed player, composer, and conductor Philippe Côté and pianist Mark Copeland. Plus, she also interviews German drummer and composer Markeli Wiening on Situation Fluxus at 10 a.m. on 90.7 FM. That's followed by Transformational Listening at 11 and Crossroads and Rhythm live from Alan Skerritt from the WGXC Hudson studio at noon after the local news. At 3 p.m., it's time to turn on the news. And this week, it's all about the new variant.
Omicron.
This new Omicron variant.
Omicron.
The rapidly spreading Omicron variant.
The Omicron variant.
The Omicron variant.
Then there's Omicron.
Is it Omicron?
Potato, potato, tomato, tomato. Let's call the whole thing off.
Omicron or something? Yeah.
I might be messing up the pronunciation of this. Is it Omicron? Omicron? How do we say it?
It's called the Omicron.
At 7 p.m., we head live to Catskill with the Catskill Makers Syndicate for their monthly show Singularity, where they talk about all things science, technology, and more. At 8 p.m., tune in for Donna and Honey's Love Motel with relationship advice. 9 p.m., we go live to Toronto and Andrew O'Connor for his Disco 3000 show. And then we beam somewhere from Columbia County with the Magic Stranger show, 10 p.m. on the radio at WGXC.
Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
The Hudson Area Library hosts a chestnut roast Saturday, December 4th at 2 p.m. at Oakdale Lake. There'll be an open fire on the Oakdale Beach in Hudson for the chestnut roast by the Hudson Area Library at 2 p.m. Saturday, December 4th, with Emerson Martin of Arthur's Point Farm giving a talk about chestnuts. Find out more about this and many other local community events on the WGXC community calendar, WGXC.org. WGXC and Art Oh My welcome Phil Klein's Unsilent Night back to Ghent this year. WGXC will broadcast Phil Klein's Unsilent Night from Art Oh My in Ghent. The event is from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. on Saturday, December 4th. You can participate at Art Oh My. You're encouraged to bring a mobile phone, especially one with external speakers, or a boombox with a functioning tape deck. If you can't be there in person, you can tune in on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM. That's Unsilent Night from Phil Klein at Art Oh My and on the radio at WGXC, Saturday, December 4th, 5:30 to 7:30 p.m.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, December 2nd. Early on, we see it is not quite as cold as it has been lately. 37 degrees in Olivaria and 40 in Bullshead. Going to be rainy today. Less than half an inch of accumulation is expected. Temperatures get up to 50 degrees by 1 p.m. About that time, winds will pick up to about 12 miles per hour, making it a chilly afternoon despite the relatively high temperature. Rain tapers off by midnight and temperatures bottom out at 31 degrees. Tomorrow will be dry with a high of only 39 degrees. 23 degrees overnight takes us into a Saturday with a high of 42. And sprinkles of rain and snow through the day. Sunday is looking dry with a high of 41. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 12:21 a.m., low tide at 7:05 a.m., high tide again at 12:56 p.m., and low tide again at 7:47 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 38 degrees. Sunset today will be at 4:12 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:02 a.m. Looking way up, we see the brightest comet of the year will approach us next Friday. Comet Leonard, also known as C-2021-A1, could come close enough to be seen with the naked eye. Solar wind speed is currently 484.7 kilometers per second at 7.7 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions for daytime are fair up to 5 megahertz. For nighttime, it will be fair across the board. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 4, unsettled. The current sunspot number is 37. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Kirby Crone of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click Donate. Thank you for your support.
There is nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. If we wish to make it softer, we will tune it to a whisper. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. We can roll the image, make it flutter. We can change the focus to a soft blur or sharpen it to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your television set. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
Let's go higher now. We'll be right back.
Space Jam. Back to Rudolph.
Let's go.
You will carry a message of peace and unity to the farthest reaches of the universe.
That was from electronic artist Burial from the 2021 EP Shock Power of Love. The song was called Space Cadet.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Welcome to Hudson Valley Word of Mouth. I'm your host, Julia Jorn, and I live and work in Round Top in beautiful Greene County. Come along with me as I meander through the Hudson Valley, the Northern Catskills, the Capital Region, and beyond to interview the people behind the special spots and hidden gems that make our area of New York State and our collective community both distinct and diverse. You'll likely discover that you don't have to travel too far to pay them a visit. They may already be in your own backyard or just around the corner. And I'll bet their place might turn out to be that one certain destination you keep meaning to check out. So I'm here to remind you, put it on your list. Together we'll meet shop owners and small business owners, curators, designers, and artists, chefs, farmers, and culinary experts, and other creative entrepreneurs. We'll hear their own personal stories, learn about their unique offerings, and hit them up for their own local recommendations. Thanks for listening. Today I'm in the tiny town of Cherry Valley to meet with Rita Seiko Payne, the talented designer behind Baco Ceramics. Okay, to start, Rita, where does the name Baco come from?
Baco is actually a mix of my two grandmothers' names. So I share the middle name Seiko with my paternal grandmother, and Belliker was my maternal grandmother's name, and they were both really excellent cooks and were huge on meals and serving things. And so I wanted to kind of have a way to honor how they brought people together with food. And I'm not as good of a cook, so I'm doing it in my own kind of way.
So when did you start making pottery, and can you describe the amazing space we're in right now?
I started making pottery in high school, and I actually had a gallery show in my public library.
And where was this?
This was in Sydney, New York, so I'm not too far away from there now, but I had a show, and I remember I sold enough pottery in my high school show to be able to afford my computer for college. And then I went on to college and graduated with my degree in ceramics from Pratt Institute in 2010. And then I've just been doing it ever since. It just developed more and more, and every year I have new ideas, and I've been in this space for 3 years.
And what was this space?
This space was formerly a lumber operation and a fur trapper and trader business. So the ceramic business that is now in it is a lot different than its original vibe.
And it's really hidden here in Cherry Valley. I actually had a little bit of a hard time finding it today. Do you want to talk about this town?
Yeah, so the town is pretty cool. My business is technically on Main Street, but it's hidden a little bit behind the Main Street. It's, I think, a town of 400 people normally, but it's always been an artist community. So in the 70s and 80s, Ginsberg had a school here and commune, and it's full of weavers and potters and metalsmiths, and they're all kind of come from different cities and things like that and came to this funny little town and created this totally unique artist community.
Do you want to talk a little bit about what you're making here? I see a lot of shapes and objects and designs that look like food.
Yeah, so I cast objects that are normally disposable, whether it be something like a cabbage bowl or an acorn squash. I also take disposable, like, to-go things, and I'll cast those too. So anything that is a temporary form, I can make into a functional ceramic form.
And how do you do that?
I take plaster molds, and so the original object is cast in plaster, and it has all the details. I also use a liquid clay, so that kind of goes into all the crevices of the plaster form, and I'm able to get these, like, almost exact replicas of the original just in clay.
I love them. I love this cabbage bowl. So it's a bowl that looks like a cabbage if you were to flip it over.
For sure.
But it's also conceptual too, because the colors are not something you would naturally find in nature. Like, talk about this incredible color blue that you've created.
So I have this glaze that I actually developed while I was in college for a few years, but I have this turquoise color that I call Dr. Payne.
Why is that Dr. Payne?
Because Payne's my last name, and I wanted it to sound very professional because I put so much work into it. But it's a really unique color, and usually when people see this turquoise color, they know that it's coming from me, and it's food safe, and it's awesome.
And then where can you find your designs?
Right now, I have my work in about 13 stores and online and internationally, actually.
Congratulations.
Now. Thanks.
So are any of those stores in upstate New York?
Yes, I have a few stores in upstate New York. One right down the road from Cherry Valley in Sharon Springs, New York, is the Beekman Mercantile, who I've been working with for a few years. I also have a really huge selection in Riverwood in Cooperstown. It's my partner's business, actually, too. So he's been helping me out, sales and things like that. And I also get to put all my, like, brand new designs into the store. So that's been a really fun partnership for us.
And so he can test run them in his store.
He test runs everything. And he's like, knows all the insights because he's in the studio and hearing all my, like, fun glaze things and everything. So he's got some really fun anecdotes that he gets to tell customers.
Thank you, Todd.
Thanks, Todd.
Thanks, Todd. What is this?
What you're hearing is a bell pepper bell. So that's one of my newest designs, and I got the assignment to make a bell, and it seemed really obvious to me to do something kind of punny and cast a bell pepper. So that's a new form that I'm working on.
I love it. So it's literally a pepper from someone's garden?
Yeah. Yep, just a dissected pepper and turned into clay. Exactly.
And then what other things have you gotten from people's gardens, and where did they come from?
Oh my gosh. So part of the real fun about my job is I think my customers and the people that like my pottery get really involved in creating stuff and being part of the creative process. So I just made a set of sunflower plates, or sunflower seed plates, I guess. So I casted the actual head on a sunflower from my friend's garden down the street, and those are super duper awesome.
They're so detailed.
It's such a fun process, and I'm learning a lot about the objects that I'm casting as I'm doing it. So it's been a learning experience the whole time.
And what's that up there? That looks like a giant gourd or a pumpkin.
Yes, I am a big fan of gourds. My mom last year actually grew a giant pumpkin plant that like wove around her shed, and it ended up making this, I guess what would end up being 10-gallon pumpkin or something. So I cut that in half, cast that, so I have this giant pumpkin bowl which now holds like 3 or 4 gallons. But it's got all the details and like the little dimples of the pumpkin. It's pretty great.
Have you ever cast something from nature that didn't work?
I have casted a lot of things from nature that haven't worked. I have casted corn, which didn't work out.
Like a corn on the cob?
Corn on the cob didn't work very well. Asparagus chopsticks didn't work very well.
Great idea, though.
But it's a great idea, and I still think that, yeah.
Gonna work on that. And I saw you did something with tomatoes.
Yeah, I love tomatoes, too. I took regular round tomatoes and a really interesting heirloom tomato, and I turned them into lidded jars. So they have a couple different functions now, but they're just these precious little gardeny objects.
Is there something on your wish list that you're wanting to cast? Or do you go out in the world and see everything as possibly something you could cast?
Yeah, and I definitely have probably more that I can cast even in my studio right now, just things I've collected from takeout meals or people's gardens or whatever. But nothing on my wish list right now. I'm keeping up with my ideas right now.
Just trying to keep up with the demand.
Yeah.
And what's up next in terms of you being out in the world?
Well, I have an event coming up this weekend. So there's a Cherry Valley holiday open house weekend. So a lot of the businesses are participating. I'm having a pop-up at my studio for the first time in a couple of years. And then in February, I'm going to be part of the American Craft Council show in Baltimore. I'm part of the Emerging Artist Program there. So that's an exciting first show back after COVID.
What kind of makers are there?
It's amazingly huge variety of stuff. So there's fiber arts, there's a ton of glass stuff. There's stuff that I can't even predict there because people are using a lot of found objects, but it's such a great, unique, eclectic collection of artists that are just hustling, trying to make it work. You know?
And is that open to the public?
That is open to the public. And they have a couple different ones. Baltimore, I believe, is like the main show, but there's one later in the year is in St. Paul.
What's the most fun part about running your own business?
Meeting the people that like my work and want to be involved with my work. I couldn't have even predicted the connections that I've made, whether through the art world or my customers. And I think those people give me the energy to keep going, and I give them the energy and empower them to create something of their own, whether it be food or to just be thoughtful about, hey, here's an awesome sunflower. You should make something out of this, you know?
Well, on this snowy day, I'll let you get back to work in your studio. What are you doing today?
I have kilns to fire, and I'm getting ready for my sale, and just trying to stay warm.
Yeah. Well, let's get the heat back on.
Yeah.
Thank you, Rita.
Thanks.
Thanks for tuning in to Hudson Valley Word of Mouth. If you're interested in checking out an ongoing list of local recommendations, or if you have recommendations of your own to share, go to my Instagram at Roundtop Recommends, or visit the Wave Farm website at wavefarm.org for the Hudson Valley Word of Mouth segment archives and how to reach me. Talk to you next time.
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Interesting, boring, really, really wonderful things.
It'd be about
chocolate pigs.
She's obsessed with pigs.
Chocolate pigs?
All
the way down.
I turned it down. Only dogs can hear.
I turned it down.
Do it.
Did you hear that?
No.
And you are listening. You're listening to 90.7. WGXC Acre. Catskills. Today, East Durham. Catskills.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Well, for our first segment, I'm going to talk to Mark about what's happening with the climate change policy issues in New York. Last month, the world's leaders conducted the 26th COP, COPE, the Climate International Summit, in Glasgow. The two-week event ended with the deep cuts in greenhouse emissions that scientists had pleaded for. Here in New York, the state is still in the process of implementing the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act that state's lawmakers approved 2.5 years ago. On Tuesday, the Climate Action Council, set up to develop a plan for state action on climate, met to finish its work on the first draft. Well, Mark, how are things going with that?
Unfortunately, pretty slow. I mean, the law did set out a 3.5-year timeline to develop what they call a scoping plan to guide state action, not determine it. The plan is not binding, but supporters hope that it will become the roadmap to, you know, largely direct state action moving forward. The council, however, is largely members of the executive branch and has a handful of representatives from climate groups, but also the energy industry and academics. Now, they're required to have their final draft, that's just a draft, by the end of this December. Then we'll have at least a six-month comment period, and then the state has until the end of 2022 to formally adopt it, and then one has to figure out how do they implement it. So by not taking place into the end of 2022, that means it does not go into effect until a new governor is sworn in with a host of challenges to former Lieutenant Governor Hochul, now governor. And it'll be up to the next governor to actually determine what happens to the plan. Now, the state had a similar process when Governor David Pattison was in office, and he actually drafted, or is it, you know, his Climate Action Council drafted a climate action plan. But when Cuomo came in office, even though he reissued the executive order that Pattison had issued, he just ignored the draft plan, and it took another 10 years until the legislature put it, into law. A law is stronger than an executive action, and certainly far more people are paying attention than they were 10 years ago. So presumably it will be taken a lot more seriously. But the next governor will have an awful lot of legal leeway as to what they do with this plan.
Well, what's a worry is that 70% has to be renewable energy by 2030. Is that giving us enough time? And what are we going to do about this draft plan, and who's writing it?
Well, that's a two-part question. They do have enough time to hit 70% renewable energy, and hopefully higher. I'd like to see them out closer to 100% by 2030. Renewable energy for electricity, which is actually a very small part of the carbon emissions in New York State, less than 25%. However, the state over the last 20 years has been much better about setting up goals than they are at meeting them. For instance, in 2002, Governor Pataki set us some pretty ambitious goals for renewable energy, trying to increase it from about 19%, mainly hydro in 2002, to eventually a goal of 30% in 2015. The reality is they only added about 3% to wind and solar over that 13-year period, and still 20 years later, they've only added 5% of wind and solar. So there's a lot of good ideas or things that are in the works, but they actually are moving very, very slowly. Now, who's writing the plan? Basically, the people left over from Governor Cuomo is writing the plan. It's largely staff-driven, and what they do is they write very, very intelligent treatises about the issue of climate change, but then get very vague about the details about what is actually going to be done. And normally they leave all the answers to the questions they pose to the governor, who often will swoop in at the last moment, and they'll have a 100-page report, and then he'll write one page, which is the only page that counts, that actually provides, some guidance. As I said, there are basically like three or four climate activists on the committee, one or two academics, but then also, several people representing the energy industry, the utilities, and the governor basically has the votes. Whatever he decides to do, now it's her, is what will be done.
Can you tell me, are any of these meetings open to the public, or are these any members of the public invited to make comments or read these perhaps proposals?
A loaded question. The meetings of the Climate Action Council itself are open to the public, though they have been on Zoom, not in person. A lot of the information is not shared with the public. What they did this week was they reviewed an apparent draft climate plan. That plan was not shared with the public, The plan was not shared with the media. And it seemed like the council advisory members, perhaps apart from the government officials who dominated, you know, didn't get to see it until the last moment. And part of my problem has been that they ask very polite questions, but they haven't figured out how to really engage and push the council in a stronger direction.
Well, we've only got a couple of minutes left, and I'd like to know, maybe is there some other big issues that we need to be aware of?
Well, the state budget is coming up. Pretty much the state legislature says they're not going to do the big CCIA polluter penalty bill designed to raise $15 billion to help fund all these ideas. We really need probably closer to $30, $40 billion a year. So there'll be a big fight around that. And I will also say the various climate groups, recognizing over the last 2 years, they basically have gotten nothing out of the state legislature on climate, are coming together to try to rally support around 12 various bills, everything from the Green New Deal to divesting the state teachers funds from fossil fuels and stopping new fossil fuel infrastructure. They're hoping by having some large rallies, they'll put more political pressure on the state legislature to actually do something. And then people will definitely be engaged in trying to impact upon this plan that the council will have another year to adopt, even though the plan will not be binding at the end of the process.
So has the CLCPA had much of impact yet?
It's had some impact. It's not had as much impact as I think people had wanted. One of the big things was really to try to get money to be directed to environmental justice communities. Not that has not occurred yet. But recently, the State Department of Environmental Conservation cited the climate law and denying the permits to two new fossil fuel plants. And that was very important.
Well, Mark, thanks so much. Is there anything that you'd like to add that we haven't mentioned yet?
People just need to pay attention. They can actually Google the Climate Action Council, and you can actually read some of their minutes and presentation online. And certainly, it's always good to let your legislators know what you think about climate and other issues.
Yeah, we get messed up with so much going on. It's a good thing to remember climate doesn't get lost in this mad world we live in. Thank you, Mark.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.